Yo, what up? This is Dart Adams, and this is episode 96 of Dart Against Humanity. I've been so busy this past week, I didn't have an opportunity to actually come up with what this episode of Dart Against Humanity was going to be about. So last week, I mentioned it on Monday. A piece that I wrote was going to run about Mellow Mayonnaise and running on You Discover Music. That's Universal's website. And it was Mellow Mayonnaise, the Hypest from Cyprus. I broke down Mellow Mayonnaise's career, early career, his first album, Escape from Havana, which came out in 1989, and his second single, Mentirosa, which became a crossover rap hit, went gold. He became the first Latino to have a gold single, and it was followed up by another hit single by a Latino, a Chicano MC, actually, Kid Frost, La Raza. So I did that piece. But what I also did was I wrote a piece for Beat Tips, LL Cool J's 30th anniversary piece. And what's crazy is that, so LL Cool J's album was released by Def Jam on a Friday, September 14th, 1990. But LL Cool J has his own site outlet called Rock the Bells. And they've been doing this whole LL Cool J Rock the Bells 30th anniversary push of content. And I believe that they think that the album was released on September 18th, which would have been that next Tuesday. But the thing is that when you look at the charts and look at where it came in, where it went to the next week, it's very clear they had extra days of sales that kicked in with the next chart. That had the full sales. And that could have only happened if it was released Friday, just like his previous album was released by Def Jam on a Friday, and it had similar chart trajectory. Started out low, and then the next week it shot up 95 places or something ridiculous because they had the full numbers. Because back then, black music, again, for some odd reason, they reported earlier than the pop side did. But once, early 1991, they switched over to SoundScan, a lot of that changes. So if you're doing research, I need to explain something to you. Oftentimes, you have to wait 1, 2, 3 weeks, and then that's when the album enters the Billboard charts. However, in the mid-90s, when everybody's using SoundScan, and instead of having the black albums chart, I think delayed like they did back in the days, everybody reported the same time. So it's 1, 2, and then it's there. And that's the case with Kool G Rap's album, 4, 5, 6. So again, Up North Trips made the mistake of saying that that album was released on September 12th, 1995. No, it wasn't. It was released September 26th, 1995. The proof is if you go and check the charts to see when albums that were released September 26th, 1995 enter the charts, I believe they enter on October 7th, 1995. And you'll notice that two albums, which were, one album was definitely released September 26th, enters the Billboard charts the same day, and that is Das Effects's Hold It Down. So Das Effects's Hold It Down definitely came out September 26th, and I know for a fact that 4, 5, 6 came out because that's when I bought them both. And I told Ev, I was like, I'm pretty sure that came out the 26th. And he had some smart comment like, I can't wait for the takedown. And I'm just like, man, if you just do your job, I won't have anything to critique you about. So I decided to be, because I was busy, I decided to not be super petty at that moment in time and break down where he was wrong. I decided to wait for September 26th to do the entire breakdown of how you can tell that 4, 5, 6 was not released on September 12th, like he erroneously reported. But also what I'm going to do on top of that is I'm going to find tweets from Peter Rosenberg, who said that Kool G Rap's 4, 5, 6 had no impact when on October 14th, 1995, it was the number one album on the black music charts, period. How can an album with absolutely no impact that anybody who knows rap music and was around and outside during 1995 cites this album and regards it as a classic and say it had no impact when it clearly did? So yeah, and the funny thing is that I could say that on this podcast and it's not going to change it from happening, because it's not like I have a Spotify type audience, you know? I mean, I have a good size audience for an independent podcast, you know? I've done pretty good numbers, you know, considering. I'm very happy with them. And another weird thing is that as I'm winding down in my time as a podcaster for Anchor, that's my chair. It's odd to me that I haven't had another sponsorship since November 2019. Like, that's crazy. There was a stretch where my numbers were just going up. Like, I was up 25%. And I was looking at the at my numbers, and I noticed that other was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's no accounting for it. And I had to go and find these other outlets that were carrying Dart Against Humanity. So I found out it was on radio, and I was like, radio? What the hell is radio? You know, like, oh shit. And then like, I'm finding out that it's on these other places, like Backtracks. Like, what the hell is Backtracks? But I had to search. I had to do all this stuff. I had to ask people, like, what were other outlets that carried podcasts that I may not know about? I had to ask the fans themselves, what do you listen to Dart Against Humanity on? I did it once in an episode. I was like, what's not on this list? Tell me where you listen to Dart Against Humanity so I can add it to my blog roll. I did that like seasons ago. And it's just odd that given all this new listenership, I didn't get more ads. Then I didn't care because it's over anyway. And then somebody hit me and was like, yo, Dart, I searched for your podcast and I can't find it. It doesn't come up. And I start Googling. And I'm like, it's coming up here, it's coming up here, it's coming up here, it's coming up here. And he's like, inside the app. I'm like, what? And he took screenshots. He showed me pictures. He was like, inside the app itself, inside Anchor itself, if you search for Dart Against Humanity, it doesn't show up. And I was like, I don't care. I was like, I don't care. Like, if you Google Dart Against Humanity, it comes up. And then one of my boys, Jordan Martin, told me that he was in a Tesla, I believe. And when he went on to search for podcasts, a lot of podcasts don't come up, like Locked On Celtics didn't show up. This other podcast didn't show up. But when he searched for Dart Against Humanity, it played it. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. And another weird thing is that in the a couple years ago, when you looked inside the Anchor box, it would tell you like you had listens from certain places. And at one point it was telling me that I was getting listens from Amazon Alexa. And I was like, what? I'm getting listens from Amazon Alexa? So I'm on Amazon Alexa? So then I started telling people, I started adding it in my list. I was like, ask Amazon Alexa to play Dart Against Humanity. People were like, yo, thanks for telling me, because I didn't know it could play it. And it was like, it was playing it. And then I go back and it's not there anymore. And I'm like, what? So there was no accounting for that. I was like, why was it there and then it's gone? So it was like weird stuff like that. And the thing is, like, when you have a podcast, you don't know shit. Like, nobody really walks you through how to grow a podcast yourself, or where to go, or what resources are available to you, or how to go about submitting it, or who to submit it to or what you need to submit it. Like I went through 18 months of hell trying to submit my podcast to Deezer. 18 months before they came back and told me that your podcast has to be submitted in this format in RSS, which I submitted my RSS feed, and they were like, no, it needs to be this. It's encrypted like this. And then I just stopped caring because I was like, this is going to be my last season of Dart Against Humanity. Man, I don't fucking need Deezer. And the thing is, the next thing I do, hopefully I'll be able to find a way to figure that out. I managed to build this podcast until it had 50 global distributors and was in like almost 80 countries. I have listeners in almost 80 countries from a podcast is just me talking into a fucking iPhone XR. And I didn't start this podcast with an iPhone XR. Right? There's been a real change. There's been a real growth, you know, over time. And I think that's the beauty of it. And I think the other beauty of it is that, like, things outlive, you know, their use. And I think that that's how things should be. There should always be change. There should always be evolution. It should be constant. And I knew from when I started this podcast that it would end eventually. I didn't know how many episodes I would do. I didn't even know how it would shake out. So I just went with it. I knew I was going to take breaks. And I didn't know how that was going to affect the podcast. But the beauty of it is that after I started this podcast in April 22nd, 2018. And to see where it's headed and what I've done, you know, how my career shaked out. And I go back and listen to early episodes and I know where I was in life and mentally and financially when I did those first episodes. And I had no idea how to navigate that world or what to do. And as much as I'm comfortable in my skin speaking, I never want to do another podcast where I don't interact and play off somebody else. And the difference with a lecture is lectures are interactive. I can talk, I can have stuff, I can have materials, whatever. I can crack jokes, I can take questions, and that'll inform what I do. So I'm not in my head as much. When I did a lot of these podcasts, I was always in my head because I'm hyper aware. So I'm talking, and as I'm talking in my head, I'm like, will you shut up? You're not getting to the point. You're rambling. Can this be more succinct? Have some information in front of you so you don't veer off topic. My brain is overclocked. So for me to be someone that has a podcast, I'm always worried that I'm boring the shit out of the listener. But at the same time, I'm hyper aware. So I tell you as I'm doing it that I might be boring the shit out of you, and I hope I'm not. And at the same time, my brain's like, find something to talk about. Find something to talk about. And that's actually what I'm doing right now. So one of the conversations that was happening on Twitter was it was talking about great first seasons of TV shows, and everybody was given their first seasons of episodes, like first seasons, great first seasons of shows for one. And I realized I was looking at my list, like a lot of people will call some things elitist. I definitely have a bias. I realized that my list of shows with great first seasons, very few of them were comedies. Most of them were drama. And for some odd reason, It takes a lot for me to regard a comedy on the same level as a drama in terms of shows that I think are great. And then there are some shows that other people love that I don't. And people look at me like, how come you didn't include this? For example, I never, ever, ever liked Mad Men. I feel nothing when I watch Mad Men. I don't care about any of the characters on the screen. I don't care about anybody's arc. I don't care, don't care, don't care. So it bores me to tears. So people are like, yo, what about Mad Men? Yawn. And then another one is that people are hitting me is like, yo, how come you didn't talk about True Detective? I think that's what it's called. And just the fact that I don't remember the title alone lets you know. Like, I don't know what else I was watching. I don't remember what else I was doing. I have to actually look up when True Detective aired to figure out what else I was doing that I wasn't engrossed by it. Because they were like, how could you leave that off? I leave it off every single time. And I did two huge lists, two long lists. And I'm actually trying to type in my other MacBook Pro right now. I have two, of course. And to figure out what these lists, like what the list is, so I can read it and actually have something to talk about and maybe, you know, salvage this episode. So I'm looking for keywords. Yeah, that ain't it. I fucked that up. Now it's just me talking about Orphan Black and me and Daniel Jose Older going back and forth from 2013 to 2014 about how much we love Orphan Black and how we think Tatiana Maslany is amazing and she's playing multiple roles. And ironically, she actually gets the role for She-Hulk. Oh, I know something I can actually talk about. So, one of my favorite shows that's on right now, it's in the second season, and it's about to be Friday, is The Boys. Now, the thing about The Boys is that The Boys is on Amazon Prime. The studio is Sony, and it is an amazing show. It is a great show. It's entertaining. It's clever. It's violent. It's gory. It's gritty. There are excellent characters. It's funny. There's a lot of interesting character development. Some nice story arcs. Now, here's the issue. It's adapted from a comic book series called The Boys, which I'm sorry to tell you, if you like the show, fuck it. If you love the show, you will be so underwhelmed and disappointed by the source material. The show makes the source material seem like it is great. And the danger of the show, as much as I love it, is that people will watch the show and say, wow, I need to read these books. And I've been on Twitter telling people, do not do it. Just enjoy the show. I wish that the same care in character development, the same care in actually coming up with clever storylines, the same care in the writing and the dialogue and the interplay between characters and the interpersonal and intrapersonal relationships between everybody on the show that seems really fucking genuine and draws you in could have existed in the source material. It doesn't. It's surface. It's a lot of shock shit. It's a lot of shock value. It's a lot of really white edgelord doing things that are crass and terrible just to do it. It's like Eminem rap lyrics hyped up on Mountain Dew from 1999 in comic book form. there's a lot of there are a lot of those Garth Ennis and Mark Millar type books from the early zeros did read to me like those Vice books. You know, it was like the formation of the internet and shock culture and the E-bombs world, you know, fucking Jackass era. And I feel like that trickled over into the comic books. Like, people talk about, like, the Punisher. But the Punisher wasn't just for shock value. It had actual depth. It had character development. It had long-standing relationships. There was a lot of psychological shit going on. There was difference in philosophies. And I feel like we didn't get what we got from Daredevil, Spider-Man, The Punisher, Captain America, Iron Man, T'Challa, The Falcon, Nomad, Moon Knight, you know, like their differing approaches to being superheroes and the way they saw things. And how, like, the way we got the Professor X Magneto back and forth, you know, and then it was Professor X Magneto and Emma Frost, because she had her school in Massachusetts with the Hellions. And we don't get that with the Boys. And that's disappointing. And when I think about that as a writer, I'm just like, that really sucks. From a writer and a fan perspective. But when I did give all these different shows that I think had great first seasons, like Dark Matter, and mind you, I still haven't found the list. What did I have on there? I had later on today, while I was walking around doing errands, I said, how come I left off Californication? I had Weeds on there, but I think that was on my second list. Halt and Catch Fire, which I love. Everybody knows that I love Friday Night Lights. What I didn't write, what I kind of wish I did, but, you know, people would have fucking gone crazy, is on some real shit, One Tree Hill. I'll keep it a buck with y'all. One Tree Hill is a show about two brothers from different sides of the tracks. Same dad, raised by their mothers. Well, one has the dad in the home on the rich side, and the other son is raised by his single mom. Two guys that their brothers, I don't remember, did they know they were brothers or did they find out? Either way, love basketball. One is a writer. Of course, the poor guy on the wrong side of tracks is the writer. And the other one loves old school hip hop, right? Then the one who's the writer and loves books is in love with a cheerleader who isn't a traditional cheerleader, but loves music and has this insane vinyl collection that she got from her dad. Who's like a seaman, so he goes out a seaman, so he's like a longshoreman, or like he's a sailor, better, and he goes off on trips, so she's home alone a lot, and she has access to all of his albums. Then like, you take all these different elements, and I'm like, so they took everything I like and put it on one show. You mix fucking literature with basketball, with music. Alright, you got me. Fuck it. And then, like, what they really did was you take, so the Sophia Bush, the argument was always Sophia Bush versus, what was that show? Not, was it the OC? Rachel Bilson. It was always Sophia Bush versus Rachel Bilson. And I was always team Sophia Bush. And then on the other side, you have Hillary Burton, who I remember from MTV. Curly-haired blonde girl. And they were like, yeah, we're going to cast her in the lead role as the brooding cheerleader with the record collection who loves music, who ends up becoming an A&R and then runs her own record label. And I'm just like, yo, what are y'all doing? This is catnip for me. So, yeah, I love that show. I'm trying to figure out what show did I have on my list that I know it's going to come up. Shit, what list, what show did I have? I don't want to go through my thing and just scroll down. That's going to be stupid. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to scroll down. Anyway. So far, I've done 25 minutes of this podcast, going into minute... Actually, no, I'm going into minute 27. It's really funny how when we get at this point in the life of the podcast, I'm doing math in my head like, all right, I can, if I can figure it out by 30 minutes in this episode, I can finish strong with the last 20 minutes, you know? But yeah, the LL Cool J piece that I did was received really well. The 30th anniversary piece, a lot of people liked it. It had a lot of traction online. But it's gonna bug me out because the 18th, by the time you hear this, I think that's when LL Cool J is gonna really drop his content. And it's sad because that means that the artists got their own release date wrong, which is understandable because you're on tour, you're busy. You don't always know when your album came out. I went back and forth with Chuck D once, and I explained to him that the reason he doesn't know when those two albums came out exactly is because he was on tour. Both times. He was on tour for an album that hadn't come out yet. And he was overseas on one. You know, you're not at home when your album comes out like now and you're doing like the press junket and your tour and you're doing your press junket to promote your album. Like, there are instances of which guys put out albums and then, you know, they were on tour. And that's when the album sold back in the day. Like Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, they were selling their album on tour. Because you would go back and look at the Billboard charts and you're like, yo, how does this album keep staying on the charts? It's not the single. It's because they saw them come to town. And when they saw them come to town, they went for somebody else. And they were like, yo, let me get this album because these motherfuckers rocked it. Think about that concept now. For the most part, people are selling songs. You know, it's not about the album. And I remember writing that piece years ago about, is the album a dead concept? And I'm like, no, it's not. Albums matter to the people they matter to. Just like having a physical copy of a film on DVD or Blu-ray matters to those people it matters to. There's going to be a Beatles Get Back book that's going to cover Let It Be you know, what should have been for the 50th anniversary of Let It Be. And when I think about it, this Peter Jackson was giving access to all the records and all the pictures and all the footage from the film that became Let It Be, which is only an 80-minute film. And now it's going to be released in 2021 as, you know, a book. You could pre-order it now and you're not going to get it for another year. So, what? I don't get it. Why is that? Why would you do that? That's stupid. But yeah, that's one of the things that's happening. And we got to, so another Twitter conversation was four movies you like more than anybody else. Okay, things about Twitter, right? People don't understand what questions mean. Four movies you like more than anybody else. And then people put up four classic films. No, dumbass. The question is four films you like more than anybody else. So that means films that are off the beaten path or could be considered cult classics. Films that maybe people didn't get or don't like. You know? Cosmopolis. I picked Sleepers because it's a film that a lot of people just, and I mentioned in a previous podcast, a film that people maybe watch once and never watch again. I watch Sleepers during breakfast. Okay? I love Sleepers. I have a table next to the table I'm in front of with my two. You can hear the hum of one of them because that's the older one, the MacBook Pro in the back. And I have a table next to me over here. You just heard me knock on it. And on here for months after I did a piece about like one of its anniversaries, because it came out in 1996. So I had it over here forever after writing about its anniversary. And it came out October 18th, 1996, some shit. And I had it here forever because I would just watch it intermittently. People can't watch that movie more than once. So I picked Southland Tales, which is a lot of people like, you like Southland Tales. I don't get it. And then I had to explain to them why they don't get it. Fun. The Way of the Gun, which is a cult classic, if there ever was one, that a lot of people just didn't see. And Lucky Number 7, another cult classic film that like not enough people saw. You know, that's the type of answer you give. And then another question was, King Crooked asked, what's an album, a rap album, that's not often mentioned among classics? And people don't understand what that question means, so they responded with albums that are universally regarded as classics. Like Ultramatic MC's Critical Beatdown. That is universally agreed upon as a classic. OC's Word Life. OC's Word Life has been an agreed upon classic since like 1999, 2000. Where have you been? And then you have to realize that like a lot of the ages skew young. So like my answer was Erroneous Diversifier Imaginarium from 1998. Another one would have been Architechnology by Rubber Room from 99. So, like, that's the type of answer they're looking for, you know? Like, it cracks me up. Like, people don't understand what questions mean or how to answer them. And it's not even a thing of, I don't like your answer. That's just a thing. Like, these questions exist for this reason. And you're not doing it right. And I realize why it's taking me so long to find any of my answers, because the entire fucking internet and Twitter blew up when the LA Clippers lost, blew a 3-1 lead against the Nuggets. And I'm scrolling and I'm scrolling and I'm scrolling. But yeah, It is insane to me to think that, like, I think I had Orphan Black on the list, and again, I type in Dart Adams Orphan Black and nothing comes up but old tweets about me watching Orphan Black. And me arguing with people about the game one of the Miami Heat Celtics. So the Celtics are down 2-0 to the Miami Heat right now. Again, I've been on here previously on the podcast. The Celtics lost a tough game 3. The series is tied. They go to game 7. It's not over until you lose 4. You don't advance until you win 4. So, and again, like, given COVID-19 and how everything was for me back in March and how I was afraid that, you know, yo, what happens if I contract this virus and I die before I reach any of my goals? And hopefully this thing is over so all these deals that I had looming don't go away. And then, of course, the money fell out and a lot of things that I had in the works end up dying. And I was depressed for a little minute. Then I climbed out of it. I started working and things started looking up and things started going well. And I'm good now, you know, even though, you know, there's a pandemic and 200,000 people have passed from it due to our horrible leadership. You know, I still am able to, like, move and live. I have a home. You know what I'm saying? I have a home I'm in. You know, I'm good. I'm good financially. You know, and when this podcast started, I was not. I was like, okay. But, you know what I'm saying? But if something bad happened, potentially, I wouldn't be. Just thinking about when, at my age, when I, like, watch a show, I think about the music, think about the writing, think about the pacing, think about the casting. And I'm like, I can almost feel one day my name is going to appear on that screen as a writer or a producer or writing an episode or created by. It's going to happen. And when this podcast started, I was so far away from that goal. And now it's kind of in reach. 3 weeks from now will be the 1-year anniversary of the release of my book, The Book of Dart. Today, it got written about in the Nashville Scene alongside Brian Coleman's, you know, Check the Technique and Check the Technique Volume 2. Now, Brian Coleman, friend of mine, read Rakim told me, read all his books, look up to him. The man is a human encyclopedia. I can ask him about the Rathskeller, he could tell me. I could ask him about the sky cap. He can tell me about it. You know, like, the man writes his notes by hand and transcribes them. He's actually been to the Cornell Hip Hop Archive and got his hands dirty and dug through that. to do research for his books, you know, and to be mentioned in the same breath as him, in the same article as him, is insane. And I just think about how I spent years like I'm underachieving. And I used to be called the J Electronica of rap journalism because all this material, but you don't have the book. All this potential, but you've never reached it. And that always drove me insane. And it looks like, and the thing is that I can feel it like now. I'm almost like there. Like I'm almost there. And I feel like after the podcast is over, that's when I'm finally going to reach it. You know? And that's just proof that, like, you know, things outlive their usefulness. I came on here to make this podcast because I felt like I needed something to show that I was worthy of, you know, maybe being in front of a classroom and lecturing. Or being somebody you would fly out and speak to people. But first I had to prove that I can actually capture an audience. And was I having to convince myself or other people? So I can go back and show you, hey, look at this thing I built from nothing. Look at the following that it has. You know, this thing. I don't look at it as content. I don't look at this as a brand. Other people call it that. I don't look at this as a brand. For me, everything is personal. There are some instances where I'm brought on to do something as labor, but I at least put some pride in that to try to make it personal on some level. I'm not just going to give you whack work. I'm not just going to give you trash work because I can get away with it. No, I'm not doing that. I have more pride than that in what I do. And that's what I mean by making things personal. Or when I write something, it's my idea. It's my concept. It's something that I'm bringing to the table. Or someone hits me, it's like, yo, I have an idea that I know you'll be able to execute. Or I know there's something that I want you to be down with. That's a good feeling. That means that my reputation is preceding me. And that took 15 years of working and not compromising certain things so that I got to that point. There's a lot of eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and tuna fish sandwiches, you know, to get there. You know, there was a lot of ramen noodles that went into that, you know. And when you're an adult and you're doing that is different. Like, again, I will. And the thing is that I've told you before, I don't want to misrepresent what this work was, what this grind was, what this sacrifice was. And also that I hope you never have to do shit like this. I don't think this is the way that everybody has to do this. If you could jump ahead in line and you could do it smarter, please do it. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. If I could tell you a way to avoid all the mistakes I made, I'm all for that. I don't understand this shit where people feel everybody has to suffer the way they did. The whole reason you suffered and you toiled and you fought and clawed to get where you were was so you can open a door and let motherfuckers in. You know, you had to get in through the fence, cut the thing, and you could just walk around to the front door and let everybody else in without getting grass stains on their knees. That's how I see it. I had to dig through the dirt to do all this stuff and find all these different resources. And when I find them, I'm going to release them to you. So you don't have to do the same shit I did
to find it. So it makes it easier for you to do research, to do the work. I will yell and I will fight and I will claw and I will bite to make it easier for you. I don't understand the need that everybody has to fight for the same shit the same way I did. There are some instances where I'm like, look, at least do this. Like, somebody will ask me something. I was like, it's in my timeline. Go look for it. It was like, can't you bring it back up? And I do this thing in my head. It was like, if you're not willing to at least go scroll through my timeline for something that I just typed 15 minutes ago, then you are not really somebody who wants to know anyway. But I'm not going to take it to an extreme and be like, if you're not willing to go search in places that you don't know exist online or know exactly how to search for something online, then I'm not going to tell you this information. No, I did all that work so you can know. That's what I do this for. I like to communicate with people. If we're not really communicating, if we're not sharing ideas, even if we disagree, I don't mind disagreements as long as we're both getting something out of it. Just the same way I'll watch a documentary about something I don't give a fuck about, but I'll learn at the end of it. There's this new thing, this new app I go on, and I'll just go and listen to conversations from people in different realms, and I learn about stuff and perspective on things that I'm not 100% really interested in, but it gives me a different idea and scope and it rounds me. And I think that's important. You have to challenge yourself. You can't stay stagnant. And working in this space and having this podcast has taught me that. I've done so many things and learned so many things I didn't think I had the capacity to. I've adjusted in ways I didn't know I would have to. And every day I have a conversation with somebody new, I'm told something new, I make an adjustment. Perfect example. This is the last thing I'm going to talk about. The piece I did for LL Cool J, I got edited for it. And my editor insists, hey, we should get on the phone and we should go over the edit. I'm like, cool. We go over the edit. He explains to me things I do wrong in syntax, things I do wrong grammatically, things I do wrong in terms of dashes, parentheses, where to use the Oxford comma. I learned what an M dash is, E-M-D-A-S. I didn't know what the hell that was. I've seen them before. I didn't know exactly what it, I didn't know it had a name. I just thought it was the dash. When not to use an ampersand, you know? And the thing is that at 45, all of this is making me better because the more I write, the more I have to present to different people in different spaces. It's giving me the leg up. It's giving me the language. It's giving me the tools to succeed. Now, I feel like it between 30 and 35, had somebody done that to me and told me everything I was doing wrong, I would have probably been discouraged or mad or angry. But now all I care about is the progression. All I care about is getting there. So if I'm doing something wrong and you tell me, I appreciate you telling me so I can fix things and get better. That comes with age. That comes with experience. That comes with surviving multiple failures. So when I look at the Boston Celtics down 2-0, and given all the things I've gone through since March, since 2016, surviving so much, my experience with this podcast, I'm not going to get mad and throw things to get angry. I have no fucking control over what the Celtics do. I have to keep working. You know, I have to keep fighting. They got to keep working. They got to keep fighting. If they win or if they lose, I still have my reality to face. And there's still a bunch of dead people from COVID-19. And we still have an election coming up in November. And I still have a a deadline for this piece I'm doing. I need 1,000 words. I'm at 842. And right after I finish this podcast, I'm going to finish this piece and submit it on time. So that's episode 96 of Dart Against Humanity. I have no idea what the fuck I'm going to name it. I'll be as surprised as you are. One.